Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kian. Today, we'll discuss the article by Higdon et al. Titled, Heman Toxicity and Autophagy. This article published online January 13, 2012. My guests today are Associate Editor Christine Desrosiers, Senior Author Victor Darley-Usmar, and Leading Expert Neil Hogg. Let's get started.
It's a great pleasure for me today to discuss this paper. And the focus of the study is on amine and its toxic effects on vascular endothelial cell, an event that may contribute to cardiovascular diseases. And while the amine's toxicity has been recognized for a while, the underlying molecular mechanism remains to be better understood. So my first question will go to you, Victor. Can you summarize the main finding of your study regarding the molecular mechanism underlying amine toxicity in endothelial cells?
Sure. Thank you, Christine. We started this study because we were trying to provide some links between several observations we and others made in the literature. One is that lipid peroxidation, when it occurs in cells, damages mitochondrial function. The second is that autophagy is a process that may play a role in protecting mitochondria from damage. So we asked the question, do lipid peroxidation products induced by heme damage the mitochondria, and are the mitochondria processed through the mitophagy pathway for repair? And we put those links together and in the context of the toxicity of heme, which is very important for a lot of pathological conditions where heme proteins are released into the blood. So what we found was that the first thing that we can detect that's happening is a loss of the mitochondrial function, particularly loss of what we call the reserve capacity. That is followed by activation of the autophagy pathway and mitophagy and also apoptosis, which seem to be competing in some way. As those pathways get initiated then and the process proceeds, ultimately the cells die. We found that the oxidized lipids are found in the autophagosome, as are, and the mitochondria is found in the autophagosome, suggesting to us a very interesting idea that oxidation of mitochondrial membranes by lipid peroxidation might target them for processing by mitophagy.
So maybe this is the step where I will ask our expert, Neil, to comment on the strengths and weaknesses of this study. Neil?
So I thought this was a really nicely put together study, very thorough. And one of the particular things I liked about it was the use of the real-time measurements of oxygen consumption and mitochondrial respiration in whole cells, and the ability to probe the mitochondrial function as a function of time in the same cell is quite an amazing ability that you can use in the Seahorse flux analyzer that's used in this study. And that gives you a lot of another dimension of information that it's very difficult to get in other ways. And the other reason I was really drawn to this paper and really intrigued by it is because we've been thinking for a long time about the role of cell-free hemoglobin in hemolytic diseases due to intravascular hemolysis. And that is known to be a problem in many hemolytic diseases. Most of the focus has actually been on the ability of cell-free hemoglobin to scavenge NO, but there's clearly other issues there as well, because if you take vessels out of diseased animals from hemolytic diseases, they still have vascular dysfunction even after you've washed all the hemoglobin away. And so this really provides a mechanism, and linking that to mitochondrial function is really intriguing and really interesting. So lots of high points. Weaknesses, it's really hard to model a chronic disease in cell culture, and how living with a low level of heme your entire life, how these processes relate to that situation, you know, is still somewhat unclear. Does an acute exposure to 20, 30 micromolar heme do the same or similar things to a lifetime's exposure of 2 or 3 micromolar heme? You know, but having said that, this kind of study really gives us clues to what might be going on in those chronic diseases and things to look for. Another perhaps slight weakness is the way heme is delivered. It's very unlikely that heme is ever free in plasma. It's likely bound up to something, and how the heme traffics into the endothelium is going to be a really important part of what heme does to the vascular system. And I think, you know, it's always hard again in cell culture to know how you should deliver the insult to the cell. And I noticed that this was done in FBS, so it's likely that it bound up to albumin before it actually got to the cell. And so it might be that because there's serum in the media, that this is more like an exposure that you would see inside the plasma of an animal.
Neil, would you have other additional specific questions?
The data seems to suggest that one of the earliest and most sensitive parameters is mitochondrial uncoupling that then leads to a lot of these other events, including triggering the autophagic response. And so what I think is interesting is how does heme cause mitochondrial uncoupling? What are the underlying mechanisms there? And I'd be interested to know if Victor had some thoughts or ideas. You see carbonylation of some mitochondrial proteins. Do you think that's involved, or do you think it's some direct effect on the mitochondrial lipid?
Well, we don't know at this point. What we do know, though, is that if we treated with the peroxyl radical scavengers, we did significantly attenuate the proton leak, the uncoupling component. So there is a lipid peroxidation component involved here. And we did find that VDAC, which is very important in the controlling ion movements in the mitochondria, is modified. But one of the things to appreciate, I think, and difficult to approach experimentally, is that when we induce lipid peroxidation, there is a proteome that's modified. It's not necessarily one target, but the interactions of those targets. So I think there could be several targets which could lead to this uncoupling effect.
Victor, how important is the problem of amine toxicity? And also, you talk in your manuscript about the contribution to cardiovascular disease in general. Could you say a few words about this?
Sure. The endothelial cell surface, of course, is the primary and initial target of heme-dependent peroxidation. We first became aware of this some years ago now when we looked at the role myoglobin plays in rhabdomyolysis. The role of heme-dependent lipid peroxidation from released heme proteins such as myoglobin and hemoglobin is far more prevalent than I think we really realize. For example, it is a major factor in the vascular complications associated with hemolytic anemias, and also is related to other diseases, for example, muscle damage or some xenobiotics which cause lysis of red blood cells. There is an idea that people have explored for quite a long time, is that there is a role for heme-dependent oxidation even in chronic low-level diseases like atherosclerosis. And you can see how that could occur, where if you trap red blood cells in thrombus and that resolves, then you have a trapped very high concentration of free hemoglobin, which of course then is released to make heme proteins.
Let's say if we come to the ultimate question, what would you see as the follow-up on this study, Victor?
Well, I think the next thing we need to do is to try and use some of these tools in appropriate animal models and we can see if we can see the same processes are occurring. There are a number of genetic tools we can use in which mitophagy is modified. And then the question, I think, it's a very simple experiment in principle, is we take one of the genetic models of autophagy and mitophagy and ask the question, does the vascular dysfunction induced by heme or rhabdomyolysis change as a consequence?
Neil, what would you see as the follow-up? Do you agree with Victor?
Yes, I do. I think that trying to test this out in some models of hemolytic anemia would also be really intriguing. Comparing, let's say, a rhabdomyolysis model where you get an acute large amount of heme in the plasma in the form of myoglobin, to compare that to an animal model that has had a lifetime of hemoglobin, low-level hemoglobin or heme exposure, such as in a sickle cell model or a spherocytotic model, I think would be really intriguing. And to see if you can see some of the same things occurring. I would really like to use some of these fluorescent lipid probes, for example, in a sickle cell model to see what kind of proteins we get oxidized and see whether we can see mitochondrial protein oxidation, adduction with lipid addux. Those are the kinds of experiments I think that will be really nice as a follow-up.
So thank you for this great discussion about this interesting study. I'm really looking forward to future research on this subject. So thank you very much for participating.
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.